The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, even Chodesh Tov, we had Rosh Chodesh at the weekend, of course, the start of Elul. For some of us, that just means the sound of the shofar in the morning. For other people who follow the Sephardi tradition, it means already beginning Slichot, getting up early in the morning to do Slichot for the whole of Elul. The penitence prayers that come before Rosh Hashanah. Those people who got up for Slichot this morning at 6 o'clock will have found 31 degrees outside at 6 a.m. this morning. We do have a heat wave. In days gone by, we would already have been transferred back onto our winter clocks because we used to follow the tradition of putting back to the winter clock in time for Slichot. No more. The daylight saving time will end now only at the end of October. So we've disconnected from the Hebrew calendar as far as daylight saving is concerned. Some breaking news this morning from Jenin. A gunfight took place between IDF soldiers and Palestinian gunmen. We understand that the IDF had surrounded a house which contained a suspect, asking the person to come out. And then there was an exchange of gunfire. As far as we know at the moment, there have been no reports of any injuries from the IDF perspective, but the IDF have been very, very active in recent weeks, arresting many, many people, going in and finding wanted people, people involved with terrorist activities. Today was the same, but unfortunately that exchange of gunfire, there have also been incidents that have taken place in other parts of Israel, also involving IDF soldiers with some Palestinian activists. So we will keep watching to see that situation. The teachers' strike looks imminent. We're supposed to send our children back to school on Thursday.
I was hoping you were going to give us good news there. Not yet.
Yeah, well, the latest, unfortunately, is that Minister of Finance Avigdor Lieberman has instructed the Attorney General to take out an injunction through the courts against the teachers to prevent them from striking. Now, it's an interesting approach because the teachers have said all the while that you're talking about an injunction through the courts, it means you're not serious about negotiating. Negotiations have gone on for ages. We're now in the critical week when children are due to go back to school. There is still no sign of the teachers coming to an agreement with the Treasury. The Minister of Education has been very critical of the Minister of Finance instructing this injunction to be taken out. We will watch the situation carefully over the next few days. And for people who are interested in space travel, Artemis 1 is the latest NASA project that will take off this afternoon from Cape Canaveral, somewhere between 2:30 and 4:30 South Africa time. This is NASA's latest project to return man to the moon. And this will be a test flight that will not be manned. This will be an uncrewed flight. And interestingly, this flight has Israeli technology on board. And the Israeli technology is in the form of an anti-radiation jacket, what they call a vest in American language. It's an anti-radiation vest that will be tested in space, in deeper space. It's already been tested on the International Space Station, which is sort of low Earth orbit, doesn't really test it to its fullest capabilities. But this time it will go out on Artemis 1, and it will be put onto a torso dummy called Zohar. Zohar will be wearing the anti-radiation jacket that's been produced in Israel, which is designed to protect astronauts against potential space radiation. Apparently, there is such a thing, and it is dangerous, and it takes place, apparently, in deeper space. And so Zohar will be wearing the anti-radiation jacket, whereas Helga, the German torso, will be the test dummy that will not wear the space radiation jacket, and there will be radiation measures attached to both of those to check how that works. I think that this flight is due to be a 6-week flight, which will apparently orbit the moon, as far as I understand. There will also be a man-sized dummy in the commander's seat, in addition to Zohar and Helga. So for those people who like that sort of thing, between 2:30 and 4:30 this afternoon, that is when this Artemis flight is due to lift off from Cape Canaveral.
Absolutely amazing. Fires are still burning at a base in Syria. That's 2 days after it was alleged that Israeli missiles struck the base. So what was at the base that seems to have attracted Israel's attention?
Well, I mean, in the first instance, the base itself is near a place called Masyaf in the northern part of Syria. And we understand that at this base, this is a base for scientific studies and research. It's a scientific studies and research center in Masyaf. But more than that, we understand that this is a base that has been used to store masses of weapons, masses of rockets produced in Iran. And the reports that I've read have suggested that up to 1,000 missiles were being stored at this scientific studies and research base. And these were all missiles that had been manufactured in Iran and brought to northern Syria and stored there. And this fire, we understand, which is still blazing and was blazing late into yesterday, and which apparently had caused the Syrians to have to use firefighting planes to try to control the fire. These fires seem to have been caused not by the Israeli strike, if indeed it was Israel who struck this location. And, you know, I would venture a guess that Israel has every reason, every motivation to want to strike that base. So it wouldn't come as any surprise to me if indeed the strike was an Israeli-initiated strike. But the fires don't apparently come from the strike themselves, but from what they call secondary explosions, secondary devices. And so that's where...
So I guess that's quite telling as to what really was there.
Exactly. So we can exactly work out what was there, because if there weren't these missiles being stored there, then the Israeli incoming missile would have hit, and that would have more or less been the end of the story. But no, this has really caused a lot of damage. There are reports about some senior Syrians actually having been killed in the attack. Some images showing some senior officers from Syrian army. Lots and lots of reports on social media and from Syrian sources, unofficial sources. Nothing official, of course, from any Israeli source to either confirm or deny this attack. But again, you know, this is Israeli intelligence at its best, working out exactly where these things are being stored, making sure that we can get there at the right time. Interestingly, the Russians now are reported to have removed their anti-missile systems from Syria. I guess they've got more important work to be done in Ukraine or elsewhere. And so some of the anti-missile hardware that the Russians had supplied being removed from Syria. And so obviously Israel taking the advantage, taking the opportunity to strike this. This is a very, very significant and very serious strike at Masyaf. And the fires are still apparently blazing, even though that attack took place a few days ago.
Right, a very, very, very telling, of course. The 125th anniversary of the first Zionist Congress is being celebrated in Basel at the moment in the presence of the Israeli President Isaac Herzog. So tell us a bit about this event.
Well, I mean, this is the World Zionist Organization that has its, you know, conferences from time to time that are usually held in Israel. But on this occasion, they've decided to hold it in Basel, in the Swiss city of Basel, because that's where the first Zionist conference took place 125 years ago. And this was the dream of Theodor Herzl. He was the man behind the idea of the Zionist conference, the first Zionist Congress. And if we can think about it, this was before the turn of last century, when anti-Semitism in Europe was rife and the Jews were just seeking a way to have their own homeland in order to escape from the massive anti-Semitism and the uncomfortable conditions, uncomfortable being like a very, very low grade, you know, a dumb, graded word to describe a very, very serious situation that the Jews found themselves in around the world, but particularly in Europe at the time. And Herzl had this dream, and he brought the Zionist Congress together in 1897 in Basel. That was 125 years ago. And we are massively privileged today to be able to celebrate 125 years since that conference took place, and to look back on 125 years of amazing achievements. Unfortunately, Herzl himself did not live to see his dream come true, but we hope that from his position where he is interred in Jerusalem on Mount Herzl, that he's watching a little bit of what's going on. And what he would have seen over 125 years, and even less than that since the founding of the state, is that in 1948, 600,000 Jews living in Israel, and in the years that followed the inception of the State of Israel, the only people who really came to live in Israel were those who were very desperate and really couldn't survive as Jews elsewhere, or those who were ideologically a little crazy, very, very driven ideologically to come and live in the land and to till the land and to go into kibbutz and to be an agriculturalist and to be very, very ideological about their Jewish existence. Those were the people who came to live here. And over the years, we had these massive aliyot. We had the lifting of Jews from Yemen and from Morocco, and Jews who came in their millions, hundreds of thousands from the former Soviet Union, and Jews who've come from Ethiopia. And of course, Jews who have come from the Western world as well. And during that period, the watchword of Jews from the Western world was, if you want to make a small fortune in Israel, you have to come with a big one. Exactly. But today, in 2022, we look at a country which really doesn't reflect any of those things. This is a country that has now become a haven for Ukrainian refugees who are escaping from their own genocide, who are escaping from their own war situation, to come and take refuge in Israel. We see people coming to take economic refuge, economic migrants who want to do better for themselves, come to Israel rather than coming to make a small fortune out of a big fortune. People come here because they want to succeed, not only because they want to live a Jewish life. And there are so many non-Jews who actually prefer and choose to come to Israel because they can see what kind of an environment we have, how dynamic it is, how it grows, how people work, how life is a good life for people. There are definitely hardships, no doubt at all. But when we look at the massive 180-degree turnaround, the ideology today of coming to live in Israel is an ideology of trying to make a difference in technology, in trying to make a difference in, you know, things like radiation jackets that go up into the International Space Station. This is the current Israel of today. And I just wonder what Herzl would think if he could honestly state his mind, state what
incredible
he can see from
that.
His
Absolutely.
Place that he lies in Jerusalem.
Yeah, it is just an incredible thing how everything has changed. Finally, leaders of the opposition, Benjamin Netanyahu, succeeded in convincing the two far-right parties to set aside their differences and run together in the upcoming election. So, interesting, Netanyahu playing the peacemaker.
Well, yes, because that's not normally the way he likes to play things, right?
No.
I know people would say he's normally the guy who likes to sow all the seeds of discontent and discontent and lack of consent. And yet on this occasion, he somehow managed to bring two very, very large personalities to come to agreement and to run together. And of course, we're talking about Itamar Ben-Gvir, and we're talking about Bezalel Smotrich, who are the leaders of the two far right wing Zionist parties in the Knesset. They ran together during the last election, and it was about a week or 10 days ago when it was announced that they would not be running together, that they would go their separate ways in the upcoming election. Of course, we haven't forgotten that there is an election coming up. It's already, not that long until our election comes up, the 1st of November, so we haven't got that long to go. And yet, there is still not quite the atmosphere where people are really getting into things, but there are obviously important things going on in the background. For Netanyahu to play the peacemaker in this particular situation was vitally important for him and for the Likud's prospects of getting back into government. He apparently invited the two men to his house in Caesarea in order to sit down and to try to iron out their differences, bearing in mind, of course, that these are competitors to him in the election. These are people who will be running against him in the election. So why the interest in getting them to run together? Well, of course, the fact is that the two of them, their parties, will join his coalition for sure. if he manages to put one together. And so it is in his interest to try to strengthen them as much as possible. But even more than that, to make sure that both parties achieve the minimum threshold, because each of them running separately were in danger of not achieving the threshold and therefore not being in the Knesset at all, and those votes essentially going to waste as far as Netanyahu was concerned. So by him bumping heads and getting them to run together, that really increases his chances of getting back into the Prime Minister's seat.
Absolutely fascinating. It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.